You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? I mean, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight, you never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Who are you?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that again. Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe. Now please, get off this planet while you still have a choice.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. My name is Mike and we got a great crew to talk to you this week. Let's of course welcome the lovely and talented Mary Ogle.
Hi everybody, it is great to be here.
It is great to talk about new Doctor Who.
It's a fantastic, I am so happy.
It's getting to be a habit or something. I can get used to this. Also, the lovely and talented in his own right, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
You ready for another episode of Doctor Who, sir?
It's like deja vu.
I know. It feels like we've done this once before. I don't know why.
Absolutely.
And joining us once again, I would say from England, but he's actually here in Atlanta. Let's welcome Anthony Williams.
Hello.
How are you, my friend?
I am doing well, thank you. How are you, Mike?
Good. I should have introduced you as my Red Dwarf partner, because I think everything I do Red Dwarf, you're involved with.
We do keep clashing on that.
Yeah, and you know what? It's a great clash, and it's a good thing to do. But it's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you, sir.
So we are going to be talking all about the Ghost Monument tonight. And this is the second episode of Season 11, and Jodie just keeps on getting better and better and more comfortable with the role of the Doctor. And this time she goes to a desert planet and has a lot of fun and almost video game-like in some ways, like a quest. So we'll talk all about it. So remember, folks, if you haven't watched this episode, there is going to be spoilers.
How exciting! Spoilers!
Okay, you have been warned. So, if we do definitely want to hear from you guys, please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to leave feedback other ways, you can call us at 404-963-9057. That's the ESO Network call-in line, and you can leave a message and tell us what you think. We definitely want to hear from you guys. And if we like what you say, we'll actually put it up on the air. It could be positive, negative, whatever you feel like. We definitely don't mind. So definitely give us a call sometime. Let me take a second to thank everyone out there who is donating to the ESO Network Patreon. Thank you guys for who have been donating. We have, you know, some great people up there and they're very loyal and they're being rewarded for it. You can actually get bonus material from the ESO Network. You don't ever have to worry about paying for ESO Network content ever. But, you know, as a little bit of a bonus, we, you know, give you guys through our Patreon for helping us out. We give you some bonus material where you can't find anywhere else. So, you know, I know this week the Watchathon from Rassilon folks have a brand new episode that should be up by the time this episode goes live. So you can, you know, subscribe to it by joining the Patreon. And for as little as 25 cents a week, that's like a gumball, you know? That's not so bad. You can actually help the ESO Network out. Any little bit helps. And, you know, for the fans of our show, for the fans of any of the other network shows, this is a way to help us, you know, basically grow and get new equipment, sustain, you know, our hosting or get better microphones or, you know, as some people say, maybe new voice lessons. That would be great. So, you know, definitely help us out, and we would really appreciate it. And, you know, you can find it really easy as patreon.com/ESO Network. Why not become part of the crew and become a Patreon of the ESO Network? We would really appreciate it. With that being said, let's now jump right into the Ghost Monument. Right from the start, this episode picks up right where we left off at the end of the last one with the crew from the they're not the TARDIS crew yet because they haven't reached it at this point in the episode. So the Doctor and her friends are floating in space. You know, if you watch other movies like Guardians of the Galaxy or stuff like that, they would have been frozen and died just like that, you would think, in the vacuum of space. But nope, just like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they get picked up by a spaceship. Was it with an improbability drive? No, but it still was right on time, so it's pretty cool. So let's jump in. Did you guys, you know, what are your first thoughts, initial thoughts watching this? Were you, you know, happy with it overall or what?
I was happy with it overall. I think it was very much like a video game mixed with a reality show, but in a good way. I thought yes, it was a simple story, but it held my interest all the way through. And I have to say, Chibnall is excelling at the characterization. I just love the way he's writing the characters and their interactions, and even the secondary characters, getting us to care about them. It's a real strength of the show so far.
I agree with that. It was interesting because it almost felt like you said, a mix between some kind of like quest video game. In some ways, I also felt like, you know, once they got onto the planet, I thought it was almost something like The Amazing Race or something like that, you know, where they had to get to a certain point and the other one had to do it or the other one would be eliminated. It was kind of interesting. And the Doctor and the crew were just tagging along.
You know, one thing I found interesting about that is to me, the whole theme of it effectively being split from the TARDIS and having to go through a series of hoops to get there, whether intentionally or not, in this case intentionally, really reminded me of those first few William Hartnell stories, stories like Marco Polo and the Keys of Marinus, where they were split from the TARDIS and had to get there.
No, definitely understandable with that. And it kind of was like the Doctor's face lit up when they found out what the ghost monument was and saw it was that it was the TARDIS.
Exactly.
And so that's why they decided to tag along. It was interesting because the Doctor kept very positive in this and, you know, trying to keep up the hopes of everybody and, you know, hey, we're on your first alien planet. Congratulations, you know. And it was just, you know, all the way until the end. And then after the race was over, she was finally like, the wind went out of her sails, it almost seemed like. And it had to have her friends pick her up.
Yeah, I didn't think that was earned at all. I thought that it just felt like it came from nowhere. And I didn't hate this episode, but I'm still waiting to get really excited by the series. I think Jodie's doing a tremendous job. I think the rest of the cast is great. They are still sticking to having really good characters in the stories, but the stories themselves, I think, just for me, are falling a little flat. They're just kind of there. I'm just not really excited yet, and really. Like, I haven't watched one of these. I mean, I know it's still early, but I'm kind of, I guess I was kind of, I don't know if I was hoping for more, but with everything else that, you know, that has changed, that has been pretty exciting, I just kind of thought the storytelling would be as well. And it seems like they're really playing it safe as far as telling stories. I just wish it was a little bit more risky, I guess. I don't know. It's, I can't quite put my finger on it, but, yeah, that's kind of my overall reaction to it.
It's definitely a change from the way Stephen Moffat told stories. And, you know, whether that's good or bad depends on your point of view. But I would say Chibnall is more character driven and Moffat is more plot, or maybe I should say theme driven, story arc driven. And so you're getting different things from them. And, you know, I agree that this is a simple story. I'm okay with it because at least at this point in the series, because it I'm more interested in the character development right now, and really getting to know the characters. Now, this might start to bother me, though, as things go along. I mean, I can get where you're coming from, but I still felt like things like the characterization and just the way it was shot, the beauty of the effects and the lighting and the location in South Africa. I mean, this was beautiful. I mean, it was beautiful just to look at, but I can see how it wasn't the most profound story. Well, no,
and I'm not saying I need that all the time. And look, I mean, I agree with that. I think it's shot really well. It does look beautiful. But like I said, I thought the acting was fine. I like the new characters, the three characters that are in this, the only other three the new ones that I thought, you know, they were really interesting. They did a pretty good job with them. As far as the companions, though, I like them. I like the actors. I thought Yasmin got like the short straw on this episode. And I'm kind of afraid of that continuing to happen as we go on, because there is, you know, Team TARDIS. So there's going to be, you know, not a lot of development with every character. But and then, you know, the Graham and Ryan stuff was like sort of seemed like it was just a rehash of, you know, the end of the last one. So I didn't think there was a lot of progress there, but I do like the things I did like. I did like the fact that, yeah, they're all excited about, you know, going to a new place. I mean, obviously they're concerned, but there's a reason that even though they aren't not there by choice, like some other companions, they're not there. Like they're not annoying. They're not going, oh, I just want to get home. So we're not experiencing that yet. I also really think that the ending, for me, the ending was like the best scene. I mean, when the Doctor sees her TARDIS again and her love for the TARDIS just really was expressed there in a way that we haven't seen really before. I really appreciated that scene. Yes, I can't wait to hear what everybody thinks of the new interior of the TARDIS.
So before we talk about that, Mike, one thing I thought was really funny in terms of how they're dealing with the Doctor's new friends. At one point, the Doctor actually says to Yaz, oh, I'm sorry, Yaz, I forgot you were there.
Yes!
That summed up the attitude to Yaz through this entire story.
It does, yes.
You know, I think my biggest problem so far is I think Chibnall's dialogue is very clunky. It's very messy. And I think, you know, at times certain aspects of the characters that he's set up are conveniently ignored. You know, Ryan is supposedly dyspraxic, but suddenly he can aim and fire a gun perfectly. Really bothered me. There's a lack of consistency there.
No, I noticed that in a couple different points, the lack of consistency, even between the first episode and this episode, with the characters, the way they were acting. And Chibnall wrote both episodes, so there should have been some kind of like Bible or something on this, because they're using a writer's room this season.
And I think to that point, my biggest worry about this season was never the casting. It was Chibnall. I've always had difficulties with his writing, whether it was Torchwood, whether it was his Doctor Who work, or even Broadchurch. I don't think he can write dialogue well, and consistency seems to be a problem of his.
Yeah, like I said, I don't want to say that this was bad. I wasn't at any point thinking to myself, "Ugh, this is awful." I'm hoping that the material rises to the level that I think these actors are capable of.
And that's where I am too.
Yeah, I mean, Jodie is. You're right, Mike. Jodie is nailing it out of the park. I mean, she. It's like she's been playing the Doctor all along. I don't think she's warming up to the role. I'm there with her. She's there for me.
She's my Doctor already.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't know that she's gotten a Doctor moment yet. You know, like how we've talked about, like how the new Doctor always gets that moment where you're like, yes.
See, that was for me. It did happen last week
when she says, "I'm the Doctor."
Yeah,
yeah. I get that, but that seemed a little contrived. I'm kind of waiting for a more organic one, you know?
See, I actually am really struggling with her doctor so far, and I don't think it's Jodie. I think she is doing everything she can with the material, but to me, she just keeps coming across as having effectively the same personality as the 10th Doctor. Every single line I can hear also in David Tennant's voice, and I'm struggling with that.
Yeah, she doesn't have her... That is, yeah, maybe the writers just don't have, they don't know her well enough to give her, like, her style of being the Doctor, you know, like, adapt to her. Because that does take some time. I think we often found when, with new Doctors, you do kind of get this generic Doctor dialogue that almost you can imagine any of them saying.
Right. I think that happens with pretty much every new Doctor, really.
Yeah, as she starts to get into the role and they are comfortable with her, what she, you know, her mannerisms and her, you know, she's going to have a catchphrase at some point. They all do, right? So, you know, or many of them. Yeah.
I was thinking it was going to be brilliant from, especially from right after her regeneration.
Yeah, it's not quite there yet, though.
Oh, I know, but you remember how Matt, he had Geronimo. And, you know, Matt had many of them, though, because it was almost like every episode, I'm wearing a bow tie. Bow ties are cool. Or I'm wearing a fez. Fezzes are cool. I'm carrying a mop. You know, how it went with him. So.
Well, I have to agree that dialogue is not Chibnall's strong point. I feel like I'm in a weird position because I almost feel like defending Chibnall, even though he is someone I have roundly criticized and was very afraid when he took over. But so far, I'm okay with what's happening and with the way things are going. And I'm pleasantly surprised. And it's true, it may be that I had low expectations, but I'm enjoying these first two episodes. Are they perfect? No, they are not. Is there moments of clunkiness? Oh, yeah. Yes, there are, especially after Moffat, who was actually quite brilliant at writing dialogue. But I still think there's a kind of, I don't even know what the right word is, but I do feel like Chibnall is actually better at developing the characters than perhaps Moffat was, at least in certain ways. Now, it's hard to really determine that after seeing only two episodes. And yeah. And the thing about Yaz, I mean, I think when you have three companions, one of them's probably always going to get short shrift.
Yeah, at least one.
In the episode, yeah. So I'm willing to reserve judgment, you know, until we see more of the stories. If that keeps happening, I'm really not going to be pleased, but I don't think it is. I hope it's not, at least.
Well, I just, like I said, I think you're going to have that, you know, as you get to know them, we may have spotlight episodes on one or the other, I think. But I think it's going to be rare that we're going to see everybody get "quote unquote" equal time and characterization, right? Because that's just really difficult to pull off. I mean, if they can, more power to them. But this is the second episode, and we already see that they're kind of dropping the ball a little bit, you know.
Well, one thing I think is interesting on that front, though, is I don't know if you guys have kind of read ahead to what the next few episodes are titled.
Nope.
But. So I'm not going to spoil that for you, but
I did see the trailer for the next week, though.
Episode 6, just from its title and the brief description that I believe is in the next DWM, does sound like it's going to be a very Yaz-centric episode.
Yeah, I think so.
I think every single one of them is going to get their moment. We may just have to wait a little bit.
Well, I hope they do, because she is a good character. And I think she's too good to waste. She almost feels like, if you guys remember back to the God Complex, there was the woman who was the doctor, and Matt Smith was teasing, "Oh, Amy, this is your replacement," you know. And she reminded me when I saw Yaz the first time that, oh, maybe it's a similar character, and I hope they do something really well with her. I like that they have someone of Indian descent. I think it's pretty awesome.
I think the three companion dynamic is going to be an interesting one. I mean, I know when they originally did it way back in the Hartnell era, and I'm going to keep harping on about this because it does seem to me like Chibnall is trying deliberately to call back to that very first season of Classic Who, that the whole reason they had three of them traveling with the Doctor was so that they could take turns going on vacation, since Doctor Who filmed 52 weeks a year. So they could, in the plot, they could incarcerate a character, miss them for a couple of episodes, and just carry on. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that three companion dynamic now that Doctor Who is no longer made in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't have like multiple like chapters throughout, like, you know, you don't have 4 to 6 hours to spend on a story. So
exactly. Yeah,
that is going to be interesting. But, I like, there was a couple of callbacks, that I noticed, there might be more, but, I picked up, of course, on the, I just draw a blank to it.
Nikita?
Thank you. Yes. Obviously that was pretty obvious, but we haven't seen it really used that way, I don't think, since New Who came back.
I seem to recall that maybe it was used at one point in the Capaldi era, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think he might have mentioned it maybe, but I don't think we've seen it to this extent. Like, I mean, this is like, wow, she's a badass. Like, she can take care of herself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which is cool.
Oh, I geeked out when it happened, and it was just like, fall back all the way back to the Venetian judo. It was awesome. And it was great, just with one little touch, and he froze. It was great.
Yeah. I also appreciated it's not a huge far callback, but it's just like when she mentioned she's got sunglasses, you know, for him, you know, everybody thought, I'm sure everybody thought she was going to whip out the Sonic sunglasses, even though she shouldn't really have those right now. So,
yeah.
But I thought that was kind of cool. It was kind of surprising to see that, you know, that she had given Graham like these really funky, like, woman sunglasses. I thought it was kind of funny, which he sports. But nobody else gets them. Nope,
just Graham.
Yeah, Graham's pretty sensitive to light, though, so it's okay.
Okay. But, yeah, there was a lot of little moments that I didn't mind. I didn't care for the hologram guy. It was just like, to me, he was like almost like any game show host.
Like, I got a feeling we might be seeing him again.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of the point of him, actually. He was supposed to be like a smarmy game show host.
Yeah, like the reality show host, like the,
right.
You know, like the guy who's at the end of the race, or, you know, the island has spoken, you know, that type of person. And it was just like, but it was interesting because, how, you know, we're finding out already that Chibnall's lied because he said there were no cliffhanger endings, so all were supposed to be one and done. We found that out at the end of the first episode. And then he also said there wouldn't be any, like, story arcs or anything. And we're already getting a story arc building.
I think we already knew. I think he said that they were going to be standalone, which they are. So, but I think we all knew there was going to be some like threads throughout the season. And yeah, we've got two things that, you know, obviously are going to be followed up on. One is the second time now in two episodes that we're talking about the Stenza, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tim Shaw will be back.
Yeah. Tim Shaw. The return of Tim Shaw. This is not so much a story beat for like the big bad this season or whatever, but what did you guys think about like this sort of secret of the Doctor's past that's kind of hinted at? That like was like, oh, what's he doing?
The Timeless Child.
The Timeless Child.
Yeah. I love the title. Like, that would make it, you know, the Doctor Who seems to have a history with like empty child and all that, but I don't know. What do you think?
I'm interested to see where that's going to go. The look on her face when it was mentioned, it was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on where it goes, but it's certainly interesting to thing to introduce and to speculate about.
I just find it interesting because I think one of the criticisms, you know, one of the many criticisms that we heard from actually from both the RTD and the Stephen Moffat era was that, you know, they kind of tried to add some history, some things to the Doctor's past that a lot of hardcore fans didn't appreciate. And it looks like right in the get-go, in the second episode, Chibnall's like, well, count me in among them because I'm doing that too.
I mean, hardcore fans will never be happy because they were upset when the concept of 13 regenerations was introduced in The Deadly Assassin. They were upset at the things Andrew Cartmell tried to introduce. Yeah, just don't worry about pleasing them. Just keep going. Do what you're doing, Mr. Chibnall.
Yeah. I mean, that's... How can you really run a show without being able to introduce new elements to it? I mean, that's just silly.
Well,
it's going to grow and change, and it's meant to grow and change. It's not meant to be a static thing.
As long as she's not half human, I'm fine. So, no, I definitely think I'm glad that they introduced something new and something that made everybody go sit back and go, whoa, okay. Because I think that was one of the big high points for this episode, truthfully. I think, you know, the acting was decent, other than, you know, Jodie, of course. But, you know, the two characters, the new ones, the two captains of the spaceships, I could have done or with or without them. They were okay.
They didn't actually add much to the plot, honestly, aside from rescuing them from space.
No, they were kind of just there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what my thing is, like, most of everybody did a good job with the material that they were given. But as far as moving things along and actually integrating characters with the story and the plot, like, that didn't seem to happen very much. Like, I was like, you know, like, so that's, I think that's where my, and I kind of felt that in the first episode as well. So, yeah, I'm kind of hoping that that's not a running theme this year.
I hope not either, but we'll have to wait and see, you know. You know, that's one of, like you guys said earlier, that's one of the criticisms of Chibnall, but we're getting different writers at least for the next few episodes.
The only, the only actors, as far as the new cast, I mean, I was familiar with Jodie, from Broadchurch as well as, a couple other things. But the only other person that I knew as far as the companions and everything was, Bradley Walsh. And I got to say that, I mean, you know, he is not letting me down. I really appreciated his work on the UK version of Law and Order, and I was really excited to see him join the cast. And he, to me, it's like I appreciate his delivery. The character of Graham is so far, I think, my favorite of the three. And I don't know if that's because I'm predisposed to Bradley, or if they've just done a better job at sort of explaining his character as opposed to the other two.
You know, I agree with you. I think from my perspective, it might be because he reminds me so much of my own grandfather, even down to his accent. So I'm really predisposed to, you know, already liking him. And for me, he's really shining. He's warm. He's probably one of the more complex characters who is beginning to show, I think, some excitement for the adventure, but is also pretty nervous about it. And I think that's probably how I would approach it as well.
Yeah.
I have a really good feeling about him.
Well, I like him too. And I feel like he's kind of the heart of the show right now. I mean, as far as the companions go. And I mean, I liked his moments, the little moment between him and Ryan. You know, Ryan's kind of the disillusioned youth, and Graham's kind of has this weary wisdom of experience, and especially the way Bradley Walsh portrayed that. I mean, it was very evident in his face, the sadness and the resignation, but the willingness to move on. which is something that you really only gain with age and experience. And it's you know, it's nice to watch a character that has some life experience, you know, go through this sort of thing. It's a different perspective, and it's not one we get a lot in Doctor Who.
I think it's one of the boldest moves of the show. I mean, obviously the headlines is like, you know, Jody as the Doctor, but putting an old man as a companion is, you know, you could just have these two young kids learning the ropes and having adventures with the Doctor, but instead they've chosen to put Graham in there. And I think it's a really, really awesome choice. And I can't imagine anybody better suited for the role than Bradley. I think it's just like, that's that element of it is what is probably outside of Jody the most rewarding of watching these two episodes that I've seen so far.
And I think the interesting thing there, and again, to go back to one of my favorite talking points, I think that really imitates one of the dynamics in very early Doctor Who, in that you have a grandparent and, in this case, a step-grandchild traveling together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we've really gone back to that. And while this is clearly a little less affectionate than the Doctor and Susan, it's still a similar kind of familial relationship. And I think that's something Chibnall is very deliberately calling on.
I also really like the fact that they haven't already, you know, they might, but they haven't given us Ryan and Yasmin are going to be a couple. There's been, well, yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, that's the tendency for, you know, television to do that sort of thing. And yes, they kind of hinted that they have some mutual liking, we'll say, of each other, like before the show, like while they were in school or something. But that's not like the foremost on their minds at this point. And I don't know. I don't even see, it doesn't even feel like that is going to happen.
Well, I hope not, because, you know, guys and girls are allowed to be friends together without romance.
Heaven forbid.
I know.
Yeah. Not on TV, sir.
I know.
Apparently you haven't been writing for television over the last decade or two.
It's crazy. You know, you don't need to have romantic feelings for every person of the opposite sex or even same sex that you meet. And it's, you know, it's not like I want to sleep with all my coworkers. My name's not Captain Jack. Come on. So, you know, I do like having people as friends, as, you know, companions, as allies. You know, it's just, it's great to have. And I would just like to see that with the TARDIS crew. I think it would be pretty darn awesome if that worked out. We already had a romantic couple. We had Amy and Rory. We don't need this again. That's just my opinion, but, you know, so what?
I agree.
Yeah, I agree too. I mean, I had nothing against, you know, having romance in Doctor Who, but not all the time. Can we please just, you know, yeah, how about we just have friends? How about we explore something different? And I hope they do that. I really do.
So nobody's here is on Team Ryaz? Did I just name that? Did
Ryan?
I just
name that?
Copyright Mike Gordon, 2018.
I think we'll probably all just pretend that never happened. That's going to get edited out.
I'm going to say this. I think Ryan is my least favorite character out of the three of them. I like Yaz. I like the grandfather. And I just, he's just a little dull to me. And I'm just not. Yeah, I already have a whiny teenager in real life. I don't need one. I'm on TV and, you know, angry at the world or whatever. I just, it didn't float with me in this episode, especially.
I think I'm okay with it because it's kind of tempered by Graham. If it was just Ryan alone, I think it would bother me more.
If it was just Ryan and Yaz, right?
I agree with Mary in that I think both Graham and Ryan are very deliberately being portrayed as having different ways of dealing with their grief. And Ryan's being shown that he's really bottling it up, and that's really shown in the line where Graham says, "You don't talk about this stuff enough." And, you know, Graham seems to be dealing with Grace's death a lot better than Ryan.
A lot of times spouses do deal with it better than the kids do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, we still have a lot to learn about his history, but I also think Ryan's role so far has been like the companion that goes like and does something dumb.
So, well, he's done that in two episodes so far.
Yeah, he's two for two. So yeah, that seems to be his role. And so and in doing so, Mike, of course you're going to be annoyed by him because you're just like, Ryan, that was dumb. Why did you do that?
No, agreed.
To go with tropes, he's the impulsive one.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely just, he's being written that way, I think, deliberately. And hopefully we'll see some growth. I mean, it will bother me if things just stay the same for all three of them. You know, there has to be some growth there to make it interesting across the series. And I really hope we get to see that.
Yeah, that's interesting because I'm not sure, you know, where they would go per se, you know, as far as growing his characters. I mean, we don't know, I guess, enough about them to know. I mean, we obviously see with Ryan, he's got things that he needs to overcome. So the course of the season, the course of the show, he will probably learn to overcome those things. But as far as Graham and Yaz, we don't know enough about them to know what their journeys are going to be, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I hope Graham's not the one that's just always like, no, wait, don't stop, you know, every episode either.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm interested to see what other writers do with them.
Yes.
No, agreed. It's going to be interesting to see when they move away from the Chibnall episodes and go into more of the other writers and see what they do with them. And I want to see these characters grow. I want to see growth. They're experiencing new things that not many humans have. They're going into space.
That's why I thought that the scene where the doctor kind of gets all, you know, desolate and down, I thought just didn't work for me yet because it didn't seem like it was earned by her. And the rest of them, it didn't seem like they were like in that place where they could bring her back. I just like, they're not there yet. They don't have that connection yet. And they're not as experienced. Like they're not like, hey, it'll be all right. You know, like, how do they know? Like, it's just like, it didn't seem like it was that well, well written, that scene.
Well, I agree. I found that jarring also.
Yeah. I mean, suddenly she just gives up. She's like, oh, what's the point? I'm like, where did that come from?
That's not exactly very doctorish. The last time I can think of it happening exactly like that was probably the Colin Baker era in Vengeance on Varus, where he just turns to Perry and says, well, we're just going to sit in the TARDIS and age and die. And I think that's probably the last time I can remember the Doctor getting that kind of down in the dumps about something.
Perry's biggest nightmare, being stuck in the TARDIS with Colin.
So this seems like a good as time as any to, okay, so the TARDIS reappears. Now, the TARDIS has been here for, like, thousands of years, right? It's just sort of stuck. Is that what I'm inferring from the plot? Like, because they say that this ghost monument has been there for, I think thousands of years, right?
Well, it phases in and out.
Every thousand years. Every thousand years it pops up, right?
Every thousand rotations is what I think he says.
Gotcha. So that could be days.
That could be days. That could be years. Who knows?
We don't know.
Never specified exactly how long that is in human times.
So that has been there a while. So, and it's been there so long that it's kind of changed its look a little bit, both outside and inside.
What did you guys think of the new interior of the TARDIS? Wow.
love and hate.
I do not like it at all.
I'm not a fan. This is probably my least favorite look of the desktop.
I love the console.
The console almost looks like the 9th and 10th Doctor's console.
Yeah, I love the console. I do not like the big crystals. And it seemed like they were trying to go for steampunky, and then they just sort of threw the crystals in there, and they don't go together very well, and it just seems very heavy and crowded.
It almost felt like a beehive, in some ways.
Oh yeah, it's got that. Yeah, it's got that kind of interior.
There's
yeah.
too much going on.
Yeah, and it almost. It looked big at first, but then it started feeling very cramped.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it felt.
When they got up by the console, I was like, especially since we're just coming back from this, coming out of this, like one that's been more wide open than almost any of them, maybe outside of, you know, the Eighth Doctor's, which was just like a mansion or something. But, I was kind of worried. I'd heard some people had misgivings about it. So, I braced myself, but I was like, I don't know. I mean, the consoles doesn't bother me, but I will say that the top, that it's shaped like the TARDIS, the beacon or the thing that bounces, you know, I was like, really, does that have to be shaped like the TARDIS?
The crystal, the TARDIS. Yeah. The police box. No.
Does it need to be shaped like a police box as well? I'm like, the whole thing is that it's a police box by accident.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's not purpose. And I didn't like that the entranceway was the police box and that the back wall was basically taken out. Then you go into the TARDIS. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I could take it or leave it, that part of it.
I mean,
it
was...
go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Mary. After you. Please.
No, I really wasn't. I didn't have a lot to add. I mean, it wasn't. It's not a good design. All right. Speaking as a designer, it's not a good design. And I don't usually say things like that. You know, I usually kind of try to see where the other designer was trying to go, or you know, to say, well, my, you know, everybody's different. Everybody's point of view is different. But it just isn't, because it is so. It's just like they threw everything they could think of up there and tried to mix it all together, and it doesn't work as a whole, for me at least.
I'm completely with you, Mary. And for me, I disagree on the console itself. I think it looks overly simplistic. It doesn't look to me from the broader photos I've seen like there are a lot of controls on there. I struggle to see how, you know, you could navigate through all the time and space with the limited number of controls that there are. I don't like the crystals. I really don't like that the central column, the time rotor, has been replaced with a gigantic crystal in itself. And I completely agree with the entranceway. I mean, it just doesn't work for me on any level whatsoever. Mm. And I think the crystals look like something out of a Superman movie.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yes, they do.
I was kind of feeling that in the first episode when, you know, to be honest, I'm not a big fan of her Sonic either.
I'm the same way, Mike.
It just looks, yeah, it doesn't look to me like something. It doesn't look cool to me, bottom line. I mean, I can analyze it and everything, but bottom line is like, I'm just like, this just looks like the least cool Sonic I've seen.
I don't mind the Sonic. I actually like it because to me it feels more organic in a lot of ways. And when I first saw it over the summer, it was just like, okay, I can deal with it. It just, to me, it looked like it was actually carved out of rock or some kind of material instead of, you know, how she built it in the whatever it was last week in the garage. And it was just like, it's not my least favorite part. And I'm hoping the TARDIS grows on me. And it just, the design of it, the look and feel, I'm hoping we get to see more of it. You know, they released more pictures of it today, and I posted it up on the Earth Station Who Facebook page. So if you want to go take a peek of it, they have more of the pictures of the interior, and it still looks like a beehive to me, but I'm hoping it grows on me. And, you know, we will see. I wasn't a big fan of the TARDIS for when I first saw, you know, David Tennant's version. I thought, you know, that was just like, it's like, how many pieces can they throw together and such? And, you know, because being a purist, I did like the round things and, you know, the white walls and everything. But I like how they changed it up. And, you know, since then, I've liked, like, Matt's two different versions of the TARDIS, and I like Capaldi's version. So hopefully this will grow on me.
I loved the TARDIS design from both 9 and 10, and actually 11 too. I've actually really, this is like the first time I think where I've seen the TARDIS when like, ooh.
Yeah, I'm exactly in the same position, Mike. Yeah. This is the first one I've seen that I categorically don't like.
I was not a huge fan of Capaldi's TARDIS in the beginning, and it kind of evolved along the way, and it grew on me the way things they added to it and changed it. I could see where the Capaldi TARDIS in the beginning was still a good design. It just wasn't my taste. This just yeah, this just I'm oh, it just isn't good. And you know, maybe it will, it might evolve along the way, you know, and it may, if it's lit differently, it may look different. I mean, there are, you know, it's when you, we haven't really seen it very much yet, so it's not entirely fair to judge it. But my first experience of it was just like you guys, it was like, oh no.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, well, we also had something else new at the beginning of this episode. We had the new theme and the new opening.
Yes.
What are you guys' thoughts? Because this is the first non-Marigold.
You know, the actual opening itself with the visuals really, again, reminded me of 60s Doctor Who. It felt like what they would have done with Patrick Troughton's title sequence if they had had CGI and color.
Yeah, I could see it.
Lots of random shapes and so on.
I was watching it and I thought, oh, look, a lava lamp. This is awesome.
Oh, that's what Barbara said. Oh, it's a lava lamp. I
love
like
lava
it.
Lamps.
I did not like it, I'll be honest. My first thought was the person who designed this is colorblind because it is so muddy. The colors in it are so muddy.
Yeah.
I read somewhere online, this was not from me, and I'm sorry, I can't remember where I got it, but somebody said it looked like they had added food coloring to a toilet bowl and flushed it.
Whoa.
I'm not sure I would go that far. But it just, it was kind of just boring and muddy. And I did like the theme. I do like what they've done with the theme, but I'm not so sure about the visuals.
See, I didn't like the drums on the theme. To me, that was just a little overkill when a more understated bass line would have worked better, in my opinion.
No.
To be honest, I have to go back and listen to it again.
No, oh, I've listened to it multiple times. I downloaded it the first day it was available.
So you hated it.
Oh, yeah. Can't stand it. No.
I mean, it definitely, I mean, certainly I've only seen it once, but I mean, heard it once, but I did like it that first time.
No, it's interesting because there's a lot I do like about it. Visually, you know, I agree with what Anthony said, that it did feel like if they could have continued like a 60s feel, and it did feel like that. And, you know, I did enjoy a lot of that era. So it was fun for me. I, you know, it wasn't my favorite opening. I didn't feel like the wow of, you know, when we used to watch the Matt Smith era and we thought, oh, is this one changing? Is Moffat putting signals into it, you know, trying to decipher it or something like that, how we used to do. And I have the audio for that to say that we did do it that way. And then we also, you know, I also liked, you know, all the clocks and the time from the Capaldi era. And, you know, it's a long way from even Tom Baker's Time Tunnel. So it'll be interesting to see what they do and where they go with it. At least we don't have a doctor winking at us in the opening. So I think it's,
You
know, well, they all do have their own like things, you know, whether it's like using the doctor's face, which is really common and especially in the classic, but, and so I was kind of like looking for patterns. I'm like, we're going to see your face. Is it somewhere in there? You know? But yeah, I mean, I kind of, you know, like the ones where, you know, it's sort of the TARDIS in the tunnel, sort of banging around. There's one season, though, where it looks really rough, like the TARDIS is just being abused. and that, I'm glad that they didn't, you know, opt for anything like that. But yeah, I guess they just wanted to save the TARDIS for, you know, later on, because yeah, I was kind of surprised there was no TARDIS at all in the opening.
Well, yeah, Barbara said that if, since the episodes look so good otherwise, that they must have spent all the money on the episodes and had nothing left for the opening titles.
Oh, wow. No, interestingly, this is the first title sequence since the original Hartnell ones that had neither the Doctor's face nor the TARDIS.
Wow. Yeah, I think, yeah.
That's, wow. That's pretty amazing if you think about it. And for me, I felt like it was very toned down. And I think that's what Chris is trying to go for this season. You know, trying to reinvent Doctor Who, making it not the Doctor trying to save the whole universe, that the Doctor is just going from adventure to adventure.
It feels very back to basics for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd agree, yeah.
So, you know, I'm like I said, I'm sure it'll grow on me, and I'm hoping to like the TARDIS, and, you know, performance of Jodie saves it for me. I'm not bad mouthing it. I'm not bashing it. You know, like I said, wait to see. And, you know, hopefully in a season or so, they'll change the interior of the TARDIS.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, so far, I feel like I've been fairly critical. And I kind of want to say that I did actually enjoy the episode, despite, you know, a few things annoying my fanboy heart. But overall, I mean, I've been enjoying the ride so far.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. I'm like, I don't want to be, you know, I mean, I kind of started off on a negative rant, I think, but I still love it. And there's nothing in there that I've seen so far to make me even consider, like, you know, not watching Doctor Who. I'm still very excited where they can go and what they can do. So I have confidence in this creative team and these actors and everything. So I just want to be excited again. And I am excited. I will say, I don't usually watch the previews for next week, but I just happen to see them this time. And I am excited about this next episode with Rosa Parks. I'm thinking this is a brilliant time, pardon the pun, but brilliant way to, like, you know, to a historical event to visit, I think. And then I'm really excited by it.
This next episode kind of scares me.
Because, no.
Well, I mean, it depends on how they do it, how they portray it, because it could go wrong. I mean, it could come across as disrespectful to Rosa Parks' legacy, depending on what you do.
I agree. And if it had, this next one is co-written by Chibnall, but also by Mallory Blackman, and her writing history. When I was in college, I was a kids bookseller, and I ended up reading some of her books. Her writing history gives me some confidence that this will be done well. She wrote an excellent series called Noughts and Crosses, which really portrays an alternative history, where the people of Africa had a technological advantage over Europeans and enslaved Europeans. And it really basically parallels American segregation, but with the races reversed. And I think with her writing history, there's a fairly good chance that Rosa Parks will be done with appropriate levels of sensitivity.
I'm hoping so. I really hope so, because it's a great topic and kind of timely in a lot of ways right now.
So, it's good to hear that. I mean, I'm glad you said that, because I don't know Mallory Blackman at all. I don't know most of the writers that are coming that Chris Chibnall has chosen. And so, but I'm definitely still looking forward to the rest of the season. And I mean, as I've been critical this time around too, but overall I'm enjoying myself.
That's cool. All right. Any final thoughts that we want to lay out there before we, you know, tear it apart even further with our rankings?
I think what I would say to any listeners who are wondering why we criticize, it's really because we love the show so much. I know that sounds kind of strange, but we criticize because we care and we want the show to be the best show it can be.
You set it up for us, my friend. That is awesome. So with you saying that, you get to go first and rate. 1 out of 5 TARDISes, my friend.
I would give this 3 out of 5 TARDISes.
Okay. Mary?
I think I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5. I mean, I did really, yes, there were parts of it. Yes, it had some problems, but I did overall really enjoy it. I enjoyed the characterizations, especially. The story was simple, but that was all right. I mean, because it gave us time to really kind of explore the characters. I wasn't impressed with the ribbon monsters or the Jawa robots, but I mean, that's okay. That didn't really matter. I mean, the true monster was the hologram guy who kind of set up the whole pointless race just for his sick enjoyment. But you know, overall, I'm happy with the way the season is going. I hope the characters keep growing and the story arc becomes interesting and not just disappears like in certain other seasons. And so, yeah, like 3.5.
Okay. Mikey.
I was thinking I was going to give it a 3.5 because I couldn't go 4 with this one, and I can't think of a reason to give it a half. So I'm going to side with Anthony and give it a 3 because I'm just like, is there something that could make? And I'm like, no, I can't. I got nothing. So a solid three, which means that it's, you know, a solid viewing. I wouldn't mind seeing it again, but I'm not itching to, like, you know, add this one to my collection and watch it over and over again. Yes, I still think, though, that we've got the makings of really, really great stuff ahead. So I'm very excited.
Okay, that's totally fair. All right, for myself, I'm going to do 3.25.
Now let me ask you, what? Why did you decide on a quarter? What's the quarter for?
The quarter for is you get a new mystery about the timeless child.
Okay.
Because I was going to give it a 3. I was agreeing with everything that both you and Anthony said, but I couldn't give it a 3.5. I didn't think it earned it. I really don't. Jody, you know, is, like I keep on saying throughout this episode, she's wonderful. I already am convinced that she's the doctor. That's not a question. But her giving up, you know, like when her sales deflated, it was just like, what? That's not the doctor. That's just not how he is, or she is. Sorry. But, you know, she just was like, no, it was just like, this isn't right. I like the effect when the tent disappeared, the two captains disappeared with it and left the four of them behind. But, you know, it was just like, then Jody was like, that's it. We're stuck here, blah, 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 on the planet that's going to kill us. So we might as well say bye. And it was just like, no, that's just not it.
The doctor always has a plan.
Yeah.
Like, always. Yeah. Like, even if it's like not working out, always.
Exactly. You know, the doctor always would figure it out. You know, wait, you know, if we have to, you know, put ourselves in suspended animation or whatever for another 1,000 years until the TARDIS appears again, whatever.
Yeah, she's okay. She'll be around.
Yeah, exactly. So the others, who cares? But yeah, that's why I gave it a quarter. This is my, I think this is the first time I gave it a quarter on one of the shows. So yeah, I just, there was good things and bad, and I am looking forward to watching Rosa, which is the next one. When I first was going through the titles, I read it first, and I read Rose, and I just like sat upright, like, no, too soon.
She's back.
No. So thank goodness for that. So we don't have to worry about that one yet, but you know, I think we'll be okay. But we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Like we said, please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. You know, definitely, you know, if you have time, go over to the Facebook group. We've got a great discussions going over, lots of little things going, you know, join the crew and, you know, let us know. We always like having new people joining us on the show, especially with the new season up. That's why we had Anthony on. It's always great to have him. So we might as well thank him for being here tonight.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Very cool. Well, you might be hearing Anthony a lot more on the network very soon. So you just never know what can happen. So wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So we have things maybe in the works, but we're not going to talk about that. Right, sir?
Right.
So, but let's thank our regular crew for being here also. Mr. Mike, always great to have you.
And as always, it's my pleasure.
And Mary?
It was great to be here. If anyone wants to find my artwork, it's maryogle.com or on Etsy at eVision Arts.
And we're very happy that Michael didn't blow you away. Because you know, both between the two of us, me and Mike Gordon could just like go, and you know, it could just like Mary would be go flying out the window. So
there are just so many ways we could take that. So
yes,
we should just move on.
I think we just need to wrap this episode up. We will be back next week with more Doctor Who. See y'all then, and we're done.
Ta-da. Perfect.
Woo-hoo! Yay!
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmos Show and the PCC Multiverse.
That is by far my favorite, because it's all so character-driven and the stakes are high and there's much more of a mystery and intrigue to it.
A game like Wolfenstein, which people are saying are one of the most socially important video games of the past 10 years.
Catch our shows on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on over 30 more podcast outlets, including our friends right here at the ESO Network.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.